This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcasts by going online to kuci.org. This is the In the Garden Show, produced by UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I am Ann Liu, your host for this hour. This week's topic is dormant pruning, part two. We are going to continue my interview with John Shara, the Master Gardener of Master Gardeners of pruning fruit trees, vines, and shrubs. John, thank you for coming back to the Studio B to talk more about dormant pruning. Like you said, there are two seasons for pruning. You want to explain that?
Okay, we have dormant pruning, which is what we're dealing with right now. And we have summer pruning, okay? And since we're talking about summer pruning, let's talk about apricots.
You mean not summer pruning, but winter pruning?
No, I'm going to talk about summer pruning.
You're going to talk about the apricots in the summer.
Because we do not prune our apricots in the winter anymore.
Ah.
Okay? And the reason we don't do that is that they've discovered that apricots are sensitive to something called, it's a Fusaria fungus, okay? And so if you prune your apricots in the wintertime, and you cannot guarantee that it's going to stay dry for about 3 or 4 weeks, then you're asking for trouble with your apricots.
Because you would be inviting disease.
Yes. So, when we prune our apricot, which is basically thinning and topping and bringing him back to size, we do that in the summer now. So we don't have to deal with moisture because of the Fusaria issue. Now, again, with like every other fruit tree we talked about, the first thing you have to think about is on a fruit tree that you're pruning, where is the fruiting wood? So on an apricot, any guesses?
On an apricot is probably the new.
Probably what?
The new wood?
Almost. What you have on an apricot, you have, again, it's older wood and it's fruiting spurs. But it's rather than
like the apple.
Yeah, it's more like an apple, but the fruiting spur doesn't quite look the same. It's basically an older lateral on older wood. Very similar to the plum looks like this too. So you get a little lateral limb down there on your limb, and that's where your fruit's going to be on that limb. Not out on the tip of the apricot, but on this little lateral limb. So that's a fruiting spur. So same thing applies when you're pruning apricots. We don't do it now. We don't dormant prune. We do a summer prune. And we're basically doing the same thing. First, what do we do when we first step up to the tree?
You've got to go around the tree and look for those suckers down on the bottom coming out of the rootstock.
Exactly right. Sucker comes out. What's the next one we should do?
You've got to look at that bark to be sure, dead woody bark, any kind of problems you might see on the bark.
Dead branches, broken branches, those come out of there automatically.
Get rid of the dead branches. And the third is the cross branching.
Yeah. A thing that literally looks crazy in there, maybe that ought to come out too. So once
you want
we've
air.
Done that, mm-hmm. That's right. And then what we're going to do is going to be walking around this tree. We're going to be bringing it down. Remember, your fruiting wood is down there, further down the limb now, so we can tip things. So we're going to be thinning a little bit, okay? Opening up the tree to get a little. Now, how many is that every 4 to 6 inches? I'm not sure, but I'd like to thin out the inside of the apricot a little bit. I'd like to top it a little bit. I'd like to bring in limbs a little bit because we can't have an apricot that's going to take over the backyard. So that stuff comes off. And the fruiting wood, like I said, is going to be back down on the limb a little bit. So it's a thinning process. And that's all we do for apricots.
And that's only in the summer.
In the summer, right, exactly. Okay.
So leave the apricot tree alone until the summer, probably around July?
Yeah, after the fruit's all off of it and everything.
After the fruit mm-hmm. is finished.
Late
all right.
Summer.
Now are we going to get into plums?
Plums are good.
Okay, let's do plums.
Now, I want you to think of plums this way. Where peaches, we really hammered those poor things when we pruned them. Plums, you have to be a little more circumspect about the wood you move off of the tree. Where is the pruning wood on a plum?
Is it on the new?
No, it's older.
On the old.
Same
okay.
thing. Older wood on lateral fruiting spurs. Little spurs, little twigs coming off. So
on the older wood.
Right. So all if right. you get in there and think about, oh, I'm going to take off all the stuff that's in there. If you take off every little tiny limb, you won't have any plums or you
I
won't
see.
Have any pluots.
So okay. this is the older wood from last summer.
Right. So, but what you're talking about is you've got a limb and the little tiny limb coming out, that might be a fruiting spur, and that's where that fruit's going to be.
And the spur, can you recognize it?
And it's going to be a little short limb off a lateral. And it's not, it would be easy, it'd be wonderful. It looked like an apple fruiting spur.
Cause it's not things, a fuzzy wuzzy,
yeah,
like a Q-tip.
Little worm thing. But
this is
they're just, they're laterals,
twigs.
They're little twigs. They might look a little older. That's on plums and pluots. And even apricots, a little. You'll notice the fruit tends to start from the bottom and kind of go to the top as the tree gets older, and that's because it's fruiting on that little older wood down low. Okay, so what are we going to do with the plum? Well, first of all, we have to think about, I can't let this plum rule my yard. It has to. So you're going to have to do something to bring it down a little bit. There's also going to be things inside the inverted bowl that we're always looking for on our backyard fruit trees. You're going to see limbs that are basically just going straight up out of the middle of the tree.
Like the water shoots.
Exactly. We call those things water shoots. And they can be easily identifiable because usually they happened last summer, and they're kind of a light tannish color rather than dark, gnarly yes. colored like the rest of the tree. And typically, they're not going to have fruit on them this year. They would if you left them in there long enough. But typically what's happening is they're just clogging up the middle of the tree too much. So you want to look at that stuff and be circumspect about it and pull some of it out, okay? Clean out those water shoots. But like I said, I like to top my plum trees. I like to take out some water shoots. I take out all the suckers and the dead stuff and all the rest of the stuff. And then I'm pretty circumspect about my plums. Because it's real easy to over-prune a plum tree, and then you won't have any fruit.
Mm.
Okay, it's hard enough to have plums anyway, plums and pluots in this area. Now, this year, we might get some because we've got all this nice, cool weather. We've got this chill going on, this chill factor. Plums are, my experience out here at all these different orchards, we just don't have very good plums, and we don't have very good, we have a few, but we don't have a lot of plums or pluots because we just don't seem to have a lot of chill, and they seem to require a little more chill than you'd expect.
Hmm.
I haven't had, I'm over in Santa Ana, and I just haven't had very good luck with my, I'm kind of backing out of my plum and pluot tree. I mean, 10 years now, I've had beautiful looking pluot trees, but one year I had fruit.
Okay. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's awfully hard sometimes to get fruit.
Because
if you're in a different microclimate, maybe, mm-hmm. but they are pretty sensitive to the chill.
I see.
Okay. So be circumspect about taking a lot of wood off your tree. Just bring it, size it a little bit, bring it in a little bit, take out a few water shoots, take off the suckers, take off the dead and crossing stuff, and back away.
And the same thing when you have the fruit, to thin it out. Maybe.
Yeah, you probably won't have enough fruit to worry about.
I'm kind of disappointed to hear that. I bought, I think it's called a Santa Rosa plum.
I know.
And it said that I was trying
Beautiful
to make a
tree.
Very pretty espalier
yeah.
plum.
Yeah.
I recommend it because the
You're
wood
dreaming,
is
baby.
Very soft.
You're
so
dreaming.
This is, I'm dreaming. Oh, dear. I guess if you're looking for a good espalier, I've seen you do some really nice apple espalier. The Anna apple do
apples
well.
Are apples and pears are
better
are,
for
well,
this area.
Well, they're dead easy to do espaliers.
Oh, gosh. You know, that's the thing about gardening is trial and error. No matter whether you're a master gardener or not, don't get mistaken that master gardeners know everything. We certainly don't, and it's constant learning. And conversations like this that we're having on the radio show, I think, help to bring up more points, little alerts in our head about how to be better gardeners, because that's the exciting thing about gardening. There's so much to learn.
Exactly right. Okay, so we've done apricots and we've done pluots and plums. Okay,
all
so
right.
Everybody's got that. Don't touch your apricots.
Don't touch the apricots.
Be circumspect about your plum
plums,
and your pluot.
Don't
and
get too disappointed.
Yeah, it'll break your heart. Okay, let's go to some.
How about figs?
Figs.
You like figs? Oh, and they're so productive.
They are, and the great thing is you can grow figs like crazy around here. You get all of them work well. We grow some beautiful things out there in the gardens out there at the South Coast. So, but here's the deal with the fig, okay? They grow really easy. I mean, you can start the things from a shoot. I mean, a cutting, you know. They're wonderful things, and they look beautiful and everything else.
You don't need the rootstock.
No, you don't.
Really?
I mean, they do graft. You can graft them too, but you can start
they can
a
just
fig
go right
cutting.
From
yeah,
graft.
That's a wonderful.
Wow.
Thing. Okay, now, but here's the trick with a fig. The fig, where do you suppose the fruit comes from on a fig?
You keep on asking me the hard questions. It must be the new.
Yeah, brand new wood. Okay. So you're going to get fruit on limbs that take off in the spring and flush out and grow, and they might grow out there 2 or 3 feet and then start throwing off figs.
They're prolific.
Okay, yeah. Now, but that's the way figs fruit. Okay, so here's the trick. That's fine, but that tree gets bigger each time. If you planted a fig and it threw out some shoots, it's got fruit on it. Hey, I'm a winner. Okay.
You got to do size control.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Because the fruit's not coming back in that same spot next year. What's going to happen if you don't touch that fig, okay, that next year, 2 years from now, it's going to come out every leaf node on that bare snark of a stick out there. It's going to throw off another limb. And then 2 or 3 out feet after that, that's where the figs are going to be.
Monster fig tree.
Yeah, exactly. Now the fig is going to be 10 feet in the air. And
too high.
That doesn't work. I mean,
you don't want to fall from a ladder.
No, and you can't get the fruit.
That's right.
So this is how we're going to deal with figs. We're going to plant that fig. It's going to flush out first year, like figs always do out here. You're going to have fruit. Yay, you're winter. Okay, what's going to happen? What is happening right now is you're going to walk out to your fig. A lot of the leaves have fallen off already. You're going to get out there and look at it. You're going to walk it around. We don't have to worry so much about suckers, but if there is something coming up out of the ground there, that comes out of there automatically. But what you're going to do to this fig too seems a little unnatural. Basically, you're going to almost staghorn
this. Prune it down heavy.
Heavy pruning. So what we're going to look at is you've got a main branch, a primary branch coming up, and then you've got 2 or 3 branches come out of there, and they grew 5 or 6 feet, and you had some figs on it this year. So what you're going to look at are those branches, okay? And you're going to take your loper and walk over to those branches. And you're going to, from where the branch hooks into that main leader, that central leader, you're going to feel around, and you'll see that there's like leaf nodes, which will be kind of opposite each other or kind of catty-corner at 90 or 180 degrees as they go up the limb, okay? You're going to count from that lateral, 1, 2, 3, and that's where you're going to make the cut.
Leave 3 little nodes.
Nodes, right. And that node is that little scarification on the side of the limb that looks like it's going to branch out. And that's what's going to happen. You're going to make that cut, okay? And then this spring, you're going to get branches that come out of those 3 nodes, and all those branches are going to have fruit on it, but now it's going to be at 3 or 4 feet rather than at 6 or 8 feet.
How far apart should I leave those nodes? Like when I'm counting 1, 2, 3?
The nodes are set. Nodes are set, Ann. If you look at the limb.
The tree knows.
Yeah. You'll count leaf nodes.
Okay.
Got three or four. Cut it. Just tack the thing off and go around to the next one and do the same thing.
But is it like a rose plant where I have to be aware of the node facing the center you don't want?
Because you could, yeah, if you care about that, if you can find one, but they're
generally the plant knows.
It doesn't. You're not going to have much choice sometimes.
But
basically what I'm saying is this is a pretty significant pruning thing.
Mm-hmm.
It'll look like you've just scalped your tree.
You have a little fig skeleton.
But that's the way you're going to have a beautiful full fig tree with lots of fruit every year. Now, next year, you'll bring it back down again. Maybe you don't bring it back down as far because those ladders you worked with us last year are much thicker now, and maybe they've thrown off a couple other laterals. So maybe you'll pick one or two of those and bring those back to three or three nodes.
Now, maybe some of our listeners didn't realize how drastic you need to cut these fig trees. And so they may presently say, oh, I'm going to go out there and do it just the way John is telling me. But those limbs have gotten really big.
Mm-hmm.
You want to just talk a little bit about how to prune?
Rule of thumb, when you're trying to bring down a big tree. I mean, a huge apricot tree, a huge palm tree, a huge apple tree. Okay, it's over a period of 3 years, 30% this year, 30% next year, 30% of that until you get to the size that you want. So it's an incremental.
I see.
Bringing the tree down. On a big fig tree, I'm not sure it matters much, but so you could probably, because figs are so
vigorous.
Vigorous and easy. I mean, we're practically forgiving. Talking about a weed, you know. So so you could probably bring it down pretty hard.
I love figs and pomegranate trees. They're just so easy and forgiving.
But they produce a lot of vegetation, so you have to be aware of that.
You have to
be aware.
Okay,
so that's how you deal with figs. Any questions?
Sounds good. Now, I remember reading about two general categories of fig.
Mm-hmm.
Is one category better than another for this area?
I think what you're thinking about is
the black and the brown, I think.
Excuse me. There's a the pruning technique that I talked about. Okay. There's a different pruning technique for some of the black figs and such. And the name escapes me right now, but basically, it's not this radical cut that I'm talking about. Okay, it's you leave a little more wood on this thing, and typically it's done with I think mission figs and what's the other one?
I have a blackjack.
Blackjack's the one. The other ones. And here's what's going on. You're leaving some of that last year's wood on, okay, and you're hoping to get a really early fig, like a fig very quickly. Now, okay, and so it gets you a fig early in the season. Now, personal preference, honestly, I don't think those things, I mean, yes, you get an early fig, but honestly, my personal preference is it doesn't seem to be as sweet as, but if you really got to have a fig, that's the way to do it. You'd leave some of that wood on rather than cutting it all off like I was talking about, and you're going to get an earlier fig. And then, like I said, the name escapes me.
I remember you mentioning it, and if listeners out there want to find it, I remember John mentioning it under Winter Care Podcast.
Yeah. So it's a different way of dealing with the fig, but the easiest thing is to just bring these things back, cut your nodes out, expect to get a wonderful crop of summer figs, and if you want to try that other technique, that's fine. It works.
Oh, figs are so delicious, and knowing that the tree is so easy, I encourage listeners out mm-hmm. there to consider figs as a fun tree to have in your garden if you like eating from your yard.
But keep them small.
Yeah. As a kid, I remember climbing the fig tree because it's such a heavy tree that it can support children's weight.
Well, you leave it alone, it'll be climbable, that's for sure.
Now, for our listeners out there, this is dormant pruning part two. In part one that we have aired earlier, we talked about plum fruit, stone fruit, plum fruit like apples and pears, stone fruit like peaches and nectarines. We covered basic pruning, clearing the garden, and we'll touch upon just some basics as well in this show, in case you haven't heard the other show. And that one we did persimmons. This one we're doing, we did persimmons and pomegranates the last show, right? And avocados. Right. This one we want to do, well, we've covered apricots and plums and fig. We want to cover some vines, such as grapevines, and then go into berries, like blackberries. They grow on vines, and then maybe blueberries, they grow on bushes. And then touching a little bit on other fruit on vines like kiwi. He just finished harvesting some kiwi out at South Coast Research and Extension Center. And I know John has worked there many, many hours and have some experience with cherimoya as well. And then his huge experience with citrus. We'll end the show with citrus and then talking a little bit more about pests and diseases and general care of fruit trees. How about that for our
plan? Sounds good.
So now we are going to go into grapes.
Okay, grapes.
Grapevines.
There are two different basic techniques for pruning grapes. There is a process or a procedure we call cordon pruning. And cane pruning. Think about where the grapes come from. It's always nice when you're talking about pruning something. Where's the fruit coming from next year?
You're always asking me, new or old? I think it's new.
Where's the fruiting wood? Okay. So there's two basic techniques. Typically with, and you can kind of use them together. It's sort of how you want your trellis to look. If you're running a horse across a covered patio or something, that's maybe one process. But typically, there are two ways to do it. Let's talk about cane pruning first. You have a grape vine that you planted, okay? And it takes a couple years to get some caliper in that vine, get it big enough and thick enough. It's still throwing off vegetation. A lot of times we're actually even thinning the fruit to get some size into that vine. So what has happened is that the vine goes dormant in the wintertime. All the
leaves fall off.
Leaves fall off and all the other stuff. And you have all these vines that have kind of went out. The fruit, and you've got a gnarly kind of a stick of that you planted originally, and these vines coming out of that trunk. The fruit, is going to come off of new vines that are going to come off of last summer's vines. You've got a piece of last summer's vine, which is kind of a nice tan colored. And where it hooks into the trunk of the grape, that may be, it's certainly darker, maybe even kind of scaly, barky looking thing. But this tan vine that grew last summer, if that was left to its own business, it would then throw off again vines off of that piece of cane, they call it, okay? So what we have to do is we have to thin this thing out a little bit. So let's talk about cane pruning. Basically, we've got a central leader of a stem, and we've selected a couple of canes off of that thing to grow, in the first couple of years, and now we've got a lot of cane. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back, follow that cane back to that central leader, and we're going to select, say, 3 or 4 canes. Okay? We just want these 4 canes. And we'll probably try to select them close to the top of that central leader of that grape stem. If there was something coming out lower, maybe we'll take that off and just get it out of the way. But so we're going to look at trying to find nice 3 to 4 nice canes on top of that vine. Okay. And we'll go out on each one of those canes a couple feet, 2 to 3 feet. Cut it off. And then we'll pull all that material off that grapevine. And we'll cut off the other canes that we're not using right there at the stem. So when we finally got this, what we've got is a central leader with 3 or 4 canes coming out the top. And we'll take those canes, and if we've got some sort of a trellis up there, which I hope we do, otherwise the whole thing is just going to fall on the ground, then we'll take those canes that we saved and wrap those things around the wire, or take some ag tape and tie them to them. Okay, that was pretty simple. we selected 3 or 4 canes, and we kept those. And then we cut everything out and cleaned the vine up. And got all that material away from it, pulled off all the old fruit, pulled off all the old leaves. End of story on cane pruning. Next year, repeat. Find another. Next year, that central leader is going to be, the caliper is even going to be thicker. Okay? And there'll probably be more vines that came off that top of that thing. Go back to the same process. Find 3 or 4 nice canes, maybe as big around as your finger. Take them out 2 or 3 feet either way. Cut them off. Cut off everything else. And that's cane pruning. And you repeat every year. You're constantly generating new cane each year.
Now, there are different kinds of grape plants. Mm-hmm. What kind of grape plant require cane pruning?
There are. You can use cane pruning on basically anything.
Ah.
Okay. But sometimes, it works better on different varieties. And you can research that. Like I know Thompsons love to be cane pruned. A lot of the flames, the table grapes like to be cane pruned. Some of the Concords prefer this other method we're going to talk about here in a second.
Okay.
Okay.
The other method.
But if you got cane pruning.
Got it down.
Got cane
2 to 4 feet long.
2 to 4
with
feet
canes.
Long. 3 to 4 canes.
3 or 4 canes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you can run them along the wire either side.
And support it.
And just encourage that central leader to just be there. And you're constantly, because it'll throw off cane down there, but you're going to be taking that off each dormant season. Okay, now, that was cane pruning. Now we're going to talk cordon pruning. Okay. Imagine this. We're going to develop, instead of just milking the little single leader of your stem of that grape, okay, that we're going to take, say, 2 of these, of that leader, which were originally cane, but we're going to take them out, okay?
Like 2 arms.
Yeah, 2 arms, exactly, 2 arms. And instead of developing, because there's cane coming out all over the place on those arms, but we're trying to work 2 or 3 arms, usually 2, and we'll want those leaders, leaders coming out to be, and they might go out a couple feet either way, or maybe just stay right there on the top, but instead of developing 3 to 4 foot canes, and we're only going to develop, say, 4 of them, okay, we're going to look at that leader, and there's going to be about every 6 inches, roughly where the leaf nodes were, there's going to be cane coming out. And we're going to cut that cane back to just 3 or 4 buds. Does that make sense now?
Yes, so, it does.
So we've got short little canes, more than 3 or 4, okay? Before we had 3 or 4 long canes, now we've got short little canes coming out of this, whether it was 1 liter or maybe we found 2, and now we're holding those leaders up there on our trellis, and we're encouraging short little pieces of cane, okay, with 3 to 4 buds on that cane. So we cut them back to, like, 3 or 4 inches.
And this is cordon.
Cordon pruning.
Cordon like a long rope.
Exactly.
So to speak. Yes. John, I'm going to have to interrupt you a little bit. We can come back to this if you want to add.
Sure.
I just need to do a station ID. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. We're going to return now with my interview with John Shara, who is a UC Master Gardeners. This show is about dormant pruning, and we're part two. This one, we're branching out into more fruit trees as well as vines and bushes and citrus. So back to John. We were just talking about cordon pruning for grapevines. Do you want to add anything else about grapes?
I think that's about it. Think of it as the cane pruning is we're developing 3 to 4 canes on the top of your grapevine, okay? The cane was last summer's cane, and they're, say, 2 to 3 feet long, okay? The cordon pruning, we're developing short little canes, more of them. They might be every 6 to 10 inches apart, and they're only 3 inches long.
So I'm visualizing where my grape plant is. I have a trellis and a fence. My trellis is not that broad, and so I can't afford having a very long vine. However, with the cordon, I can have a cordon grow out from the main branch and control the growth each year by pruning down to the vines and mm-hmm. keeping key vines.
Right.
And that would work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Great.
And if you're trying, and really when you've got you're trying to do an architectural sort of thing there.
Yes.
You can do almost anything you want with that grape. But just remember that you're going to save some canes, you're going to save some spurs, and that's where your fruit's going to come from.
And generally speaking, grapes need a lot of sunshine, and mm-hmm. so where we leave the vines, we want it exposed to more sun.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. And they're such pretty plants.
Oh, yeah.
The way they, you can see the bunches of grapes just hanging down.
But they do need to be fussed with this time of year.
Yeah.
They need to be cleaned up.
Yeah. They can be another monster plant.
Yeah.
Figs, persimmons, and grapes, yeah. I think, are my monster plants. As well as blackberry.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh, blackberry. Oh, you wrinkled your nose
berries.
For that
no,
one.
No, no.
I love eating the blackberries, but they are work at different parts of the year. It's not throughout the year, but they're important to keep pruned down and when to prune because they're biennial every 2 years, right? Okay, let's talk about blackberries.
Okay, let's talk about that. If you're going to commit to blackberries, you have to have, this isn't something you just throw in the ground and let it happen. Okay?
They're invasive.
Well, they're not only invasive, but they need something to hang on to.
Yes.
Okay. And you need to have something for them to hang on to.
Wires.
That's the only way you can separate what's going to go on from here on out. So you need some sort of a trellis for your berries. Okay. If you want to have good berries, you want to have decent berries, you want this thing to be pretty, you don't want it to, burrow its way into everything over there, then you need to dedicate, the first thing and the hardest thing to do is come up with some sort of trellis to hang onto this blackberry. or whatever kind of berry you're dealing with. It's a vine berry, okay? Now, let's think about where the fruit comes from, because this is the time of year we have to deal with vines, vine berries.
That's always key.
Yeah. So think about, where is the fruit going to be next spring, next summer, on your blackberry bush?
Isn't it the second year growth?
It's pretty close.
Don't okay. prune that first year growth. Let it...
What you're going to get your fruit on last year's new vines. The vines that you may have had some vines from year before, and you had some berries on that. But the vines that basically grew out on the ground, out from the bush, that are all nice and pretty and green, and usually a red-colored stem. Okay, that's the stuff that grew last summer. Didn't have any fruit on it, but this year it's going to have fruit. Okay, and that old vine that you had pulled up on your trellis last year, that's not going to have any fruit. So, if you had old vines pulled up on your trellis last year and you had some fruit on those things, okay, this year, that was last summer, this year you're going to cut all that stuff out of there and you're going to remove it. You're going to pull it out, shred it, or throw it in the green waste or do something, but it comes up. The new vines that basically grew out across the ground, you're going to pull up and replace those old vines on the trellis with those new vines that grew. They will then take off again in the spring and the summer, and you're going to have fruit on those vines in the summer. While they're doing that, new vines are going to be producing down on the ground, so the cycle repeats.
Yes, and he's so circling that. his finger around like an oval, and I found that to be helpful. My trellis, so to speak, has two parallel wires, mm-hmm. and so it can make this oval rather than going straight up and then hanging on a wire. It needs, because they're so long, they need to come around over and under and then up again. And then,
well, here's a good place for you to start right now. You're going to go out there. Everything that was on the wire, everything is on the trestle, that all comes out of there. Reach down in there with your gloves and cut that stuff out and pull it off, okay? And then reach down on the ground and pull all that stuff up that was on the ground and reattach it to your trellis.
And okay? It's not so easy because blackberries are thorny.
Yeah, they're thorny.
So I use my rose pruning gloves,
exactly.
The one that with the leather cover the arms.
Gauntlets are good. Gauntlets are good.
Yes, you have that, right? Where do you get that?
Those things are available. You can get them on the web and everything. But anyway, the point is, you don't want that stuff laying on the ground all the time, because this is what's going to happen. If you leave all that stuff down there, if you don't pull it back up, those vines are going to dive into the ground. And
they layer and grow new roots.
And they re-root and everything else. So that's another reason why, if you're going to commit to blackberries, it's a commitment. It isn't like a lot of other...
It's worth it, though. I love the blackberries I get. So sweet.
You need to think about getting that stuff up. If there's anything that has rooted itself out there, dig that out and get that out of there. Control your vegetation a little bit. But that's how you'll have routine, wonderful berries every year. And we grow beautiful berries around. We can do it easy.
Yes.
But that's why it's done.
And is truly nice. I mean, blackberries, I hear from Kathy Thomas when I interviewed her, blackberries are the most nutritious of the fruits.
Really?
Yes. And so
I
want to make sure I grow blackberries, because when I buy them at the market, even at the farmer's market, they're just not as sweet as the ones that grow.
They're beautiful.
In the yard.
They take a little work.
A little labor, mm-hmm. So those are the vine berries, and we want
raspberries, boysenberries, blackberries. That's the way if you think about dealing with your berry bush that way, you won't have any, you won't come to grief. Okay.
And it was kind of interesting. I tried some raspberries that were thornless. But they don't stay thornless for long. They go back to their nature.
Yeah. They do.
Let's go into blueberries.
Okay. Blueberries, a little different. It's not a vineberry. It's a bushberry. Okay. They need a lot of special nutrition. They want acid soils, but they do fine.
How much sun do they need?
They love sun. Lots of sun. So they also, it's one bush I think does better in a pot than in the ground. I've had a lot more luck with those guys in a pot than I, because they need a constant
high acid
soil thing. So if you think about it, that's much easier to control than in our typical Western alkaline soils out here.
Right.
Now, the commercial guys, they have special techniques for doing this, and they're constantly bleeding acid into the soil to keep these things acidified. But for you in the backyard, if you want it, you can have decent blueberries in a good-sized pot, good well-drained pot with lots of, and then you're constantly trying to keep the thing acidified, and you can do that with element of sulfur and peat and all the other things that you use. There's lots of techniques, and they'll show you how to do it. When you're pruning, not really pruning, you're kind of thinning and cutting out dead wood on blueberries. They're easy to do. There's no thorns. So all you have to do is just reaching in there and cutting out the dead stuff and encouraging the new green stuff, and that's where your berries are going to be. So it's they're almost brainless as far as I'm concerned.
We haven't talked about cross-pollinating too much. I know blueberries need that cross-pollinating.
They do. They do. They seem to do better if you have two different varieties, or at least two berries close together, and you expect, the biggest problem I've always had with blueberries is bird depredation. The birds will beat you to the berries faster than the, I mean, you'll have lots of berries, but you'll just never get at them because the birds get to them
That's
first.
That's true.
So you might think about how you're going to protect them, usually a screening technique of some kind. That's the best way to do it.
I mean, you got to grow some for the hungry little creatures,
well,
and then grow some for us, and so somewhere everybody can be happy.
But they'll pick the ripe ones out.
I know. That's what happened to me with my peaches last year. Something got to them all before I could get to them. I was leaving it on the tree to ripen and get sweet. Well, they knew just the right time when it was sweet.
That's right.
How about kiwis?
Exotic. Okay, now we're going up into the rare fruit business here.
Yeah,
rare
fruit.
This is going to be my best advice on rare fruit growing. Okay, there is an organization here in Orange County called the Orange County Rare Fruit Growers.
Yay.
And they are very, very involved, and they're a lot of fun. I know I'm a member. I don't get to all the meetings out there, but they do wonderful things. They do scions exchanges. They do a lot of... they have a lot of stuff, and they grow things that I've never...
Quite a few master gardeners
I know, a lot of master gardeners in there,
belong.
But just a lot of people.
They meet out at the Orange County Fairgrounds?
I think that's where they meet.
They're still there.
So I'm
knowledgeable.
I'm going to put in a plug here for the Orange County Rare Fruit Growers. If you have any notion that you might be interested in rare fruits, this is a Mediterranean climate here. And we can grow so many things that typically it never freezes, okay? So kiwi's not such an issue, but you can grow kiwis, and they'll show you how to grow kiwis. The kiwis are kind of funny because you need a mama and a papa, a male and a female kiwi to make this thing happen. So they'll teach you how to graft kiwis, so that's fun. Our kiwis, we just got harvested here about a month ago.
At the South Coast.
We also do, I know people sometimes are crazy about cherimoya. They just had a cherimoya tasting out there. You can grow cherimoya here. It's a really nice
cherimoya.
They're
delicious. And
very delicious.
It's manageable.
It's manageable.
If you learn the trick of fertilizing,
pollinating. A little bit of hand pollinating. Mm-hmm. Of course, the same thing goes along with pitahaya, the night-blooming cactus. There's all these things. So since I'm, honest to goodness, I'm not an expert on this stuff. I mean, I go out there and I prune the things, I harvest the fruit, we taste it, and we do all kinds of things. But if you're really, really interested in it, think about Orange County Rare Fruit Growers. They're a lot of fun.
That's a great plug, yes. I haven't had time to join that, but I've always heard good things about the Rare Fruit Growers.
They always have treats, too.
Yes, you get to taste. We've saved maybe 10 minutes to talk about probably one of the most important fruit trees for Orange County, because that's what we're named after. Orange County is named for the oranges. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about citrus and pruning citrus. We for listeners out there who want to hear much more, you can still go on to our podcast. We can go to our podcast, Winter Care, where John talked extensively about citrus tree pruning. But we're going to cover it again right now.
Okay. I grow a lot of citrus because it's easy to be successful with citrus out here. It's really, really easy to be successful with citrus. I love limes. I love lemons. I have three different varieties of lemons. I have two different varieties of limes. And I use that stuff continuously. And what's wonderful about living here and growing that kind of material here is a lot of it's ever-bearing. So I always have limes.
That's
which
great.
Which is always nice.
Just step out to the backyard.
And sometimes, like I mentioned before, that I haven't had, even though I've grown some beautiful-looking pluot trees, and I 8 years of hard work, and 1 year I got pluots, and the rest of the year I never got any fruit, you know? And so I've kind of defaulted to what works best for me, and citrus really works well for people out here. What I tell you, what you can do with citrus, you can crowd it close together, okay? You can kind of keep it small, keep it policed so you can doesn't overrun the garden. Imagine a citrus tree left to its own devices. It really doesn't need to be pruned. What it does is it goes up and kind of develops outward and then up and outward and gets higher as it develops. So it doesn't, what I'm saying is it doesn't need to be pruned to produce fruit like a peach would be. We prune our citrus because we need to control it. There's not that many folks that have enough room to just let a navel orange be a navel orange. We have to keep them sized so they don't cover up the patio, they don't crawl into the pool, they don't hang on the house. So we're going to do a little pruning just to keep the tree sized so we can live with it. And besides that, we probably don't need all the oranges. We can't possibly eat all the oranges off a full-sized navel orange anyway, so let's keep it a little smaller. And the way you do that is right now. So it's a good time to talk about it. It's a good time to shape your citrus trees for size. Okay. The reason we do this right now is the tree is sort of dormant. And I'm not going to, when I prune this thing, I'm not going to incite this flush that you typically get if you prune a citrus tree at any other time. I don't want that flush because we have something called citrus leaf miner here in this area, and it is all over the place, okay? And I must have been asked about citrus leaf miner 300 times. Everybody wants to know about citrus leaf miner because they're looking at the tree and the tree looks like the leaves are all curled up and they're kind of burnt and twisted and it looks like somebody's chewing on them and they're just, it looks bad. And the first thing they want to do is they want to cut that off. Well, if you did the smart thing and went to the Master Gardener hotline and asked about, okay, what do I have? And they would quickly identify it as citrus leaf miner. And one of the first things they would tell you is, do not cut that stuff off, okay? Do not defoliate the tree, because that leaf, even though it might be damaged by the citrus leaf miner, the larval stage of the little fly is actually feeding, the eggs get laid on the edge of brand new leaves, tender leaves, and they'll feed inside there a little bit, and then patch and do whatever they're doing, but they damage the leaf a little bit. And people want to cut that off. We don't want people to do that. The leaf is still producing food for the plant. So if you're constantly going through your orange tree and trimming off all your citrus leaf binder damage, then you're all you're doing is creating a buffet for the citrus leaf binder. Okay.
Probably the best way to treat for the pests is to set out a trap.
There are different techniques, and probably the best way to do it, like I said, if you're really concerned about it, go to the hotline, and they'll give you all sorts of techniques. Pheromone traps, but there are sesamicides. There's all kinds of things to do for it. But what you really have to remember, if you really care about it, is that this only really affects, really damage a tree if it's a real tiny tree, okay? Once the tree gets big, not so much. And you will have less problems if you don't cut on this tree all the time, because when you cut on this tree during when the tree's flushing, meaning in the spring, summer, and fall, then you incite new growth where you're nipping away with your nippers, and all that does, that new growth is what attracts leaf miter.
So seasonally, which time of the year is it safe to prune off some of that ugly leaf? If I did it in the winter, it's not going to promote flush, is it?
That's right. So you do it now. But after this winter.
But after the winter.
Don't mess with it.
Don't mess with it.
And
just
I wouldn't
let the leaves.
I honestly wouldn't get too.
And don't worry
about
it.
Wrap around the axle about it, because it realizes it's an indigenous species. I mean, it's all over the place. There's nothing we can do about not indigenous, but it's just all over the place right now.
It's pervasive.
So yeah. What you want to do is think about. Don't make it worse than it has to be.
Don't make it a problem.
Right.
By pruning off those leaves. Just,
right. Don't
just
do
leave
that.
Them. Don't worry about
it. If you're going to do any pruning, do it now.
Mm-hmm.
But and by March, quit. Stop. Don't do it anymore.
Because I think that the leaf miter is the most the most reproductive around June and July, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't want the flesh, that those new leaves have mm-hmm. to harden somewhat.
It's called a leaf miter buffet. That's what you're talking about.
That's right. Now, we've covered quite a bit about all kinds of fruit trees and shrubs and vines. We want to tie this up neat and tidy with where our listeners can get more training. And this time of year, we have lots of different sessions throughout Orange County. Our master gardeners are very active through our speakers bureau, presenting information about dormant pruning. And so it's a good idea to check our events calendar. You can go on our website, mgorange.ucanr.edu. Again, it's MG Orange. If you did MG Orange, you'll probably the website will probably appear for you to select. .ucanr, that stands for University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources, mm-hmm. .edu. If you have a question, John mentioned people writing in on our hotline, and we do get questions of all sorts. Sending in a question with a photo is especially helpful. You can go on hotline at mgorange.ucanr.edu. On that website, you will see a list of training through the whole year. We have training at the Great Park as well as events all over the county. You can see information in the newspaper as well,
mm-hmm.
right, John?
Exactly. I look at it all the time, all these garden sections. There's a lot of really interesting stuff going on.
It's an exciting time to be a gardener.
Yes, it is.
I think so. More and more people are reaping the benefits of gardening because it not only promotes emotional health, it's good for our earth.
Mm.
And now that the weather is changing a bit, we've gotten a little bit more rain. Maybe we have a few minutes about how this recent rain is changing our gardening practices. And we didn't talk about mulch in this part two.
Mulch, I love mulch. You know, it's my favorite deal. I like to see just about every piece of bare ground mulched, okay?
3 to 4 inches is ideal.
University's calling for 3 to 4 inches. It's an absolute necessity for avocados, but just as a way to suppress weeds, so we use less invasive weed control techniques. It suppresses weeds. It holds the water on the property rather than let it run down the drain. And every time you mulch, you're improving that soil. The soil is becoming more becoming a better grade of aggregate there. The minerals are locking up with smaller pieces of inorganic or organic material. So your soil is becoming better, less runoff. You're keeping the water that is available on the. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to save rainwater, but one of the easiest ways is to mulch like crazy, and that really holds the water on the property. I love it.
Yes, I've noticed in the years that I've re-landscaped my garden, I've remulch every year.
Yep.
And when I do, now when I plant, I notice before I can dig down maybe 6 to 10 inches, but now I can get way down to maybe a foot and a half. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do that before because a lot of our soil is just so clay.
That's right.
So feed the soil. Mm-hmm. Feed the soil. Mulch every year, and the soil will be happy, and it can feed your plants very, very well. When you shop for plants, be mindful of the plants that you are considering. Look at the chill hours that they require. You can go online and find a chill hours map for the whole country. And just generally speaking, for Orange County, where we are, I would say 100 to 200 chill hours is about where we get. Maybe this year we've had a little bit more. And the chill hours is the number of hours we have in the winter between 32 and 45 degrees. And then subtract from that the number of winter hours we have that are above 60 degrees. And so this year we've had a good amount of chill hours, but that's not consistent. So we need to conserve our earth's resources, our fresh water. Just because it's rained more this year, let's be really careful with how we irrigate our garden. Turn it off when it rains. If we have a good rain, you can leave the irrigation off for up to 2 weeks even, depending on how much rain. And consider still having a rain barrel and keep it tightly lidded so that mosquitoes and other varmints can't get in it. And this way you have the benefit of rainwater, which has more acid than the water that's been chlorinated or water we might get from the holes. Right, John? Mm-hmm. Do you want to add to that?
No, I think you're right on. Just think about what you're doing. There's some easy things you can do. And I love mulch again. It suppresses weeds, improves my soil. It holds the water on the property. And, of course, because I love avocados, the avocados got to have it.
You have been listening to John sharing his expertise on dormant pruning. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Thank you very, very much for coming into the studio, John. It's always a pleasure for us to listen to you share your expertise.
Pleasure's mine.